This train is the service to Hastings, calling at Etchingham, Robertsbridge, Battle, Crowhurst, West St. Leonard's, St. Leonard's Warrior Square, and Hastings. We will shortly be arriving at Robertsbridge.
You're listening to The Bike Show on Resonance 104.4 FM. My name's Jack Thurston, and today The Bike Show is coming from the Kent-Sussex border. I'm travelling with my old cycling friend, Daniel Start. Dan and I have been cycling in different parts of the UK for as long as I can remember. And in fact, my first international bike trip was with Dan back in 1993 when we rode from one side of Romania to the other on a couple of very inappropriate bicycles. So Dan, what's our route going to be today?
Well, it's a circular route, Jack, carefully selected so that it travels only on single track lanes. It's a bit wiggly because of that, and I think it might have quite a lot of hills in, but probably 40 miles, and we'll see if we can make it down to the coast and back up again. Does that sound all right?
And then we've got an appointment with Mad Jack Fuller, the local eccentric who's buried in a churchyard in a pyramid, apparently.
I've had a look at the map, and most of our route's on these narrow lanes, and I think we'll pass about eight pubs.
Eight pubs. All right, well, that sounds like a good selection.
There's the River Breed as well. We might be able to swim there, but we'll probably do best when we get to Crowhurst Pay.
So have you brought your swimming trunks, or is this going to be au naturel?
Well, I think it's a matter of choice.
All right, well, I also have to say, to describe the scene, that there is not a bit of man-made fibre in sight. We are cotton-clad. Dan's got a pair of leather desert boots on. And a rather fetching stripy shirt covered in grease and oil from his chain. And the bikes are actual relics. I think we're both on Reynolds 531 tubing, if that means anything to anybody listening. Dan, yours is an old Claude Butler that, in fact, you've had for as long as I've known you, which is pushing on for 20 years. I mean, tell me about your relationship with this bike.
Well, this was a present from my father. He didn't use it very much. He bought it in 1981, and even then he was quite proud of how old it was. I've probably done about 15,000 miles on it since.
And it's a kind of beige colour with quite scuffed transfers, but you can still see that it's Claude Butler. Nice old alloy wheels.
I think it's golden colour, actually.
Gold, not beige. So today I'm going to be riding on a piece of cycling history, which is a 1963 Mercian King of Mercia with a beautiful original paint job from 42 years ago, kind of British racing green with original fairground transfers and a lovely gold old style Mercian logo on the down tube. So that's going to be a real pleasure. I'm not quite sure about the 1967 Brooks saddle, because that's been moulded to somebody else's behind, and that may prove a little bit uncomfortable. Now, Dan, you've been living up in Snowdonia for the last couple of years, although you've just recently moved back to London. What were you doing up in North Wales?
Well, we were trying an experiment called Wildfire, which was about taking people on urban detoxes up into the mountains, making lots of big bonfires in the woods, doing the odd sauna, and just trying to get people into a more intuitive, relaxed state of mind, so they could get a better sense of where they wanted to go in life, what was going on for them, create a new vision for where they were going, a kind of vision quest, almost like a traditional rite of passage where you escape to the wilderness for 24 hours, fast, and then come back down off the mountain with a clearer sense of purpose.
And how does the wilderness fit into that? What's the connection between wild places and the mind?
When people go up onto a mountaintop or out into nature, it's about as close as most people get to having some kind of church, a place where they can feel the expanse of the world around them. They can see and hear wild environment, which kind of locks them into a sense of what their own wildness is and their own sense of intuition about who they are and what they are. It makes you feel very small suddenly about your life, but it also, when you start to look around for answers in places where you don't normally wouldn't normally look, it'd be quite revelatory for people.
And you've been to all kinds of wild places around the world. I mean, just this year you've been in the Niger Delta, in Azerbaijan, in the Ethiopian highlands, and before that you've been in, spent a long time in Irian Jaya. You've travelled around Africa, but still it's possible to find delights in the wildness of the home counties, isn't it?
Well, I think it's a great challenge, isn't it? What can you find within an hour from London on a train? And we've got all these amazing network of lanes and tiny little bits of wilderness, not very big, but you can find areas where you can almost lose yourself, and you know, Mother Nature is still working hard, and there are animals and a sense of magic that you might get if you're in Welsh woods or in mountains in New Guinea. And to a certain degree, it's not exactly about where you are so much, is what's around you and the sense of inspiration that gives you.
Yeah, well, we stopped after, what would you say, about 5 miles under our tyres.
5 miles? 3 miles.
3 miles for what has officially been declared as lunch.
It's 20 past one.
But this this stop is most welcome.
4 miles.
4 miles. Okay, out of a total of 25.
But at least so, an 800 foot ascent.
So in what way could 4 out of 25 be considered halfway point?
It's not a halfway point, it's really the beginning point, and then halfway point will be tea.
Okay, so everything's being rearranged in terms of the schedule.
Given that we didn't start till midday.
That's a good way to go. Now, you've got two drinks there, Dan. One drink wasn't enough for you, so you decided to get two, which is...
two halves.
A half of Harvey's Bitter and a half of locally produced Foster's Lager. Well, cheers.
Cheers. I'm starting on the Harvey's. But the Foster's is cooler.
That's true. And fizzier.
Temperature-wise, but it is a bit fizzy. I thought it might be a good thirst quencher. I must say, the Harvey's is definitely better.
Well, it's 2.5 pints later. And what's the time now, Dan? Almost 3 o'clock.
It's 2:30. I think the ride's about to begin.
So what's our route now? We're cutting off the excursion to Rye. Let's get the map out. And it's looking like Mill Corner, Beckley, down through Beckley Woods. Then there's a bridge across. We ought to go on that bridge across the River Breed, a footpath and bridge, or it could be even a ford. I don't know, that looks a bit dodgy there.
I think we'll get across there, won't we? Because if it's a footpath, then imagining there's a bridge there, surely. Well, there isn't actually a bridge, but I'm sure we'll get across, because what with low rainfall and things.
Do you think there'll be a ferryman? And will he take bikes?
Maybe in the olden days.
And then we're going to loop back round through Battle and back up to Roberts Bridge. Excellent. Well, I'm going to follow you. Well, Dan, we just pulled up at Bodiam Castle, which... I don't know, I think it's only one word that can be used to describe Bodiam Castle, and that's it's a comedy castle. I mean, this is not a castle for defending yourself, is it? This is a castle for having a children's party in or something.
It was exactly the words I was going to use. It's a comical castle. I think it's the kind of place you would entertain people. It's nice that they let bicycles in for free, though.
Yeah, now how do you get in? Because there's a huge moat full of ducks and water around it.
It's quite well defended, isn't it?
I don't know. But there's some people inside. Maybe they've gone round the back way. Maybe that's easier.
I think we should find a boat or swim. Maybe this is the place for the swim. I think there's quite an interesting story about this castle because there's stories I can't remember, though. But apparently, it was during the Great Civil War and all the round coats...
And the round heads, Dan.
The red coats, I'm thinking.
The round heads. What did the round heads do?
They came in and they sacked the castle and decided to take the roof off so it couldn't be used anymore, but which is why it's got no roof.
Wow, a tragic incident in the history of castles.
But a clever strategy, don't you think? Although I'm sure they could have defended themselves without a roof. Maybe they had... they didn't have any aeroplane then, did they?
Not in the Civil War, Dan, no.
When was that? Which century?
I think geography is your strong point, I have to say, in expeditions. When it comes to history, you're a complete dead loss.
Yeah, it's true. They've said that before. Sorry.
Not with the lips of skin, nor yet with the lips of dark snow. But let the white dove sing of the body of life, of the lover whose love is complete. Hold hands out to greet. Ah, let not the swan be brought low. Oh, all that is moved is moved by her hand. She is mirrored forever in the life of the lands, in the building of thoughts, in the shifting of sand.
Well, having been passed by a couple of very rapid cyclists who are pretty much entirely composed out of lycra, carbon fibre and titanium, we've just taken a turning off to the right and we're going to do a bit of off-road action, or at least go down a track that seems to be beginning in the most beautiful pear orchard. Look at these pears, have you ever seen anything like it?
It kind of makes you think, when they all get ripe, all in the same week, what are they going to do with them all?
Well, hopefully they'll eat them. After the pub is always a bit painful in the legs. Gosh.
I don't think it's going to have quite the effect that it does, do you?
How did you start riding? Was it riding around London?
Well, there was obviously riding to get to school, and then there was riding to escape family, escape London.
I remember bicycling was a very good way at school of getting off the organised games that they tried to force you to do, Beckley left. Because after a while, you get to a certain age, well, the age is probably 15. About 12, when you actually don't fancy doing cross country, even if you ever did fancy doing cross country.
More to the point, and you're no good at cricket or football.
And you're no good at cricket or football. And so it seemed like a perfect plan to organise a cycling club as a kind of alternative but officially sanctioned sporting pursuit. You're in charge of that, pretty much, when you were the chief ringleader, anyway.
I think it was a rather organic movement, wasn't it? But I think we need to pay thanks at this point to Andrew Shidlow, our mad Polish chemistry teacher. So we needed a school teacher who would sort of officially sanction to take the group out. And he seemed to have let us go to all the pubs, didn't he?
He did. I think he was upset that there weren't as many explosions en route as he would have liked. Because he was a chemistry teacher who was a big fan of large explosions.
White phosphorus and paraffin seemed to be his big one, I seem to remember. And there was...
Didn't he blow up some kid's hand in Epping Forest? Or is that just an urban myth?
It's probably quite close to the truth.
I thought that kid went on, who was a particularly attentive student, and then he went on and joined some militia and got involved in firearms.
Yeah, one has to be careful these days about those kind of things. We never made proxy acetone, mate. Oh dear, ruined it again with a non-PC comment. Hopefully nobody knows what proxy acetone is.
What is proxy acetone?
Proxy acetone is the unbelievably easy to make explosive that was used in all the recent terrorist attacks. They're right here.
And how do you make it?
Well, it's easily available on the internet, so basically take some acetone.
Where'd you get that from?
Nail varnish remover. You can buy it in bottles of 100ml, 500ml. Take some battery acid for cars, boil that up until it produces white smoke. That turns it into concentrated sulfuric. And then you add that to hydrogen peroxide, which is used for hair bleaching. You mix the three together, and you leave them stirred, but not shaken, overnight in a fridge. Produces crystals of proxy acetone. You only need about 5 kilograms of that.
And that'll make you a bomb?
Very, very unstable. Degrades half-life of about 3 to 5 days.
So you've got to use it quickly?
Use it quickly, it goes off, yeah. Very unstable. It's sometimes used as a detonator in its own right. Feels good to be making some distance now, doesn't it?
Well, we have a very straight road ahead of us with one of these lovely kind of archways of trees where the trees on either side of the lane have kind of joined up in the middle. So if you're a squirrel or some kind of bird, you could just hop from one side of the road to the other without actually...
Oh, there's another cyclist picking
having
batteries.
A problem.
Let's stop and talk to her.
Hello. Hi. Is it blackberries already? Wow. Really? The trouble is, picking blackberries while riding a bike puts you at grave danger of puncture, doesn't it? With the thorns. So we just come through a woodland, but it's quite interesting because on either side of the lane there's quite a different kind of woodland. I mean, what is it? Is this conifers to the left, to our left? And what's that on the right-hand side? Is that beech coppice?
I think it's hazel coppice, actually, but it's not been managed for about 10 years. You can see the poles have become more appropriate for sort of teepees rather than yurts. Very, very overgrown stumps, and very dense and penetrable.
Well, that's kind of good wood as opposed to evil wood,
traditional wood. That's certainly traditional. On the other side, it's all conifers and had the life and soul sucked out of it. Scary, though. Quite fun to wander around in a scary kind of way. Got no magic, though, has it?
I can hear a squirrel.
If you go into it.
Dan is now entering the hazel coppice. And he's completely disappeared from view.
Amazing how much lower the lane is than the woods, isn't it? You kind of have to climb up into the woods off the lane.
So what's the verdict?
That place has not been managed because there's huge bits of black and torted, overgrown coppice stumps. I suppose I don't know what you'd do with the wood these days.
We could use it to build a yurt.
Well, yeah, well, a teepee, yeah, because you need really perfect for the big fat struts of a teepee. It wouldn't be any good for a yurt. You need lots of narrow poles for that. But I don't know what else you could do with it. Once it gets to this size, it's basically ruined. You've got to cut all the big ones off again and start again. It's the poles that are useful in coppicing, up to about an inch or 2 inch diameter.
Maybe this is the bit of wood that you can buy, Dan.
Yeah, I'm getting off that idea, I think. Just think, what's the point of buying wood when you can just sort of not pay anything for it and visit it when you want?
Just wander in.
Well, exactly. Wander in, you could probably stay a few days, probably a few weeks. Nobody will know.
Yeah, that's a nice approach to
access.
Right to roam.
Right to use. Right to habitate.
It's true. I mean, what harm are you doing?
I'm not doing any harm, but people kind of have a sense that they want to... I suppose, you know, it's like... Why would you want to own a bit of woodland when you can use it anyway? You've just got extra stress worrying about how it's being used and maybe the fact that you're trying to keep people out. I think it's nice to be able to go into a bit of woodland and maybe stay a few nights there and light a fire without worrying that somebody's going to come along and turf you out. But usually you're not going to get found anyway. Anyway, you could always go and ask them if you could go and stay in there for a few days. They might think you're travellers. We used to have some woods near us in Cornwall and people came and did that.
It's beautiful looking up at the canopy of hazel leaves and the sky above them. It's all kinds of different shades of green as one leaf goes over another leaf and creates a kind of darker shade.
Incredible sort of mottled collage, isn't it?
Quite psychedelic.
I've spoken to Norm. We're gonna live in the trees. Did he ever be transformed? We're gonna live in the trees. We're gonna live in the trees. I'll bring you a fat juicy worm. I'll bring you millipedes. Open your beak and close your eyes. We're gonna live in the trees. We're gonna live in the trees. Norm tells me you're ready to fly. We're gonna live in the trees. You're that much closer to the sky. We're gonna live in the trees. We're gonna live in the trees. You either take off or you don't. You can't fly by degrees, but fly an inch and you woo, fly a mile. We're gonna live in the trees. We're gonna live in the trees.
We're gonna live. Well, we've arrived to within practically touching distance of the sea in a small town called Fairlight, which seems to be pretty much the equivalent of Hampstead Garden suburb on the south coast. And this is where I have to confess that Dan is quite the world's worst map reader. Not in the sense that he doesn't understand maps, but in the sense that if he finds that a map doesn't conform with his own sense of the way the world should look and should be, then he kind of overrides the map and says, well, no, this is clearly wrong and the world is going to be like this and there's going to be a nice beach here when all we've found is an enormous cliff. Anyway, he's insisting that there's a way down. So I've let him go off and investigate and see if he can get down to the sea. But we'll see what happens. I can still see him and he's looking down over the edge of a precipice. And so the verdict is?
I can't do it in these shoes. I might do it barefoot, but I'm not going to do it by myself.
People have been down there, you reckon?
Yeah, foolhardy people. It looks nice. Water looks warm.
How about we just go down to Fairlight Cove and have a nice swim going, down there?
Going down to a grotty little place like that. Because we're going to have to cycle all the way back up, because our route takes us over that hill anyway. We're going to have to go all the way down and all the way back up to go for a swim in a sort of concrete promenade. It doesn't feel wild enough to me. We found finally a wild part of the Kent coast. All we need to do now is
climb down a cliff.
There can be many other places it might be simpler. You've got brilliant shoes on, you're just being a coward.
Now these are cycling shoes, they're terrible. They've got a big piece of metal in the centre.
Oh, perfect. Perfect. A rope would be useful as well, maybe we could take one of those chains.
So you reckon we need crampons, ice axe and rope to go down this cliff to the sea?
I think those were your words.
Well, it's past perfect. 6 o'clock and still lovely and warm. And we're getting on for that time of the day, the golden hour, where everything just looks 100 times more beautiful than it really is. Or maybe it looks as beautiful as it really is at this time of day. Stunning, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a nice time of day. It's beautiful light, good for photography. Golden glow.
Well, we just have to recount the most amazing sight coming down through a lane back there. I was cycling behind Dan and this enormous white barn owl just flew out of the trees and flew down the lane and on top of Dan's head. It looked like it was swooping down, mistaking your head for some owl dinner. It was incredible. Have you ever seen an owl like that?
Yeah, it was absolutely beautiful, wasn't it? Huge white body.
Really beautiful flying thing. And then it stopped in the tree, had a look at us, and flew on again.
Yeah, it looked over its shoulder, didn't it? That's when we could really see that it was an owl. Just flying along beneath the boughs of the trees that were overhanging the lane.
Now that is the sound of an A road, which is exactly the kind of road that you don't want to find yourself cycling down when you're trying to recreate a cycle tour in the genteel Edwardian fashion. Well, Dan, we're coming near to our journey's end.
The graveyard.
And here we are in Brightling Churchyard, final resting place of Mad Jack Fuller, maverick industrialist and insane man. And this is where he's buried, inside a giant pyramid with a pigeon on the top at the moment. That's about 30 feet high, would you say?
Yeah, it looks rather antiquarian, doesn't it? 30 foot high, 20 foot wide.
Inside one man.
On top, family of pigeons.
Probably with more money than sense. Well, I don't know. I mean, if you make a lot of money, you've got to do something with it. Building follies and burying yourself in a pyramid is not a bad way, creative way, an artistic way to spend your money. There's a lot more tacky ways to spend your money, I suppose.
It's definitely quite impressive, slightly odd, coming into a little Kent churchyard and finding a pyramid. Well, worth cycling here for, actually.
Well, we're back at Roberts Bridge station, and it's been a beautiful ride. Zero punctures. We saw a barn owl. We saw a man buried in a pyramid. We just about escaped death on the cliffs of Fairlight. But I feel like it's been longer than a day.
So we're heading back into London almost exactly 24 hours after we set off from London. Didn't quite manage to get the swim in, although we did try finally at the end of the evening in a reservoir. It's been a fantastic way to clear the head, hasn't it?
So how does it compare to Snowdonia?
Well, it's not exactly wilderness, but I think there's something about being on a bicycle with sights and sounds rushing by the whole time, which is a bit similar to being up on a wild mountain. And yeah, different from walking because there's so much going on around you. You don't get time to have the same time to dwell on things like you do. I think it's, you know, for an hour from London, it's a bit like being up there in the rushing wind of a mountaintop.